Jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Grizzlies Tuesday edition of the show today. As every Tuesday, Amari Zankofa from The Athletic joins us every single week to talk about the Grizzlies. Sometimes we get off topic, sometimes we don't. But before we get to that, make sure you go and subscribe to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast, whatever podcast platform you're using, so you don't miss an episode every single day, just like this one with Amari Zankofa. Amari, what's going on, man?
Man, it's going great. It seems like the Grizzlies are kind of catching up with the rest of the NBA on their games. They played three of the last four games, and then this four-game road trip that I'm about to leave on in a few hours. Things are starting to ramp up a little bit.
You know, it's the Grizzlies are the type of team now that can, yeah. You know, you used to maybe being on the flip side of that if you're a Grizzlies fan the past couple, you know, in the years past. But now the Grizzlies are that team that maybe teams can sleep on. You know, like we saw that on the Timberwolves game. They just didn't look like they wanted to be there at all. And, you know, like the Grizzlies maybe can catch a few teams just like they did with the Timberwolves that maybe didn't feel like they wanted to play at all on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think this is a team that, you know, even though they're only 6-12, they have talent. I mean, obviously, Jaren Jackson Jr. is playing a lot better. And even without Ja, like you still have, you know, NBA guys that you have to deal with. I mean, you know, Bruno's been playing a lot better. You know, you still have Brandon Clark, although obviously he missed the last game. And, yeah, you just look up and down the roster, you have guys that could play, Dylan, Jay Crowder. So this is the perfect type of young team that can kind of do that to, you know, better teams, stick up every now and then. You've seen them do it about four or five times this season already. You know, they beat some good teams.
I think that's right on the money. And, you know, you mentioned Bruno Caboclo, and let's start there because I didn't talk about him in the Monday show. But you mentioned his name, so I do want to talk about him a little bit. I'll ask you this, and I kind of have my own thoughts on it, but I'll tell you after I get done. But what's do you think it's more the matchup that Bruno's getting, like he's getting better matchup, or is it just he's finding a better groove as a 4-5 big man in this league? Or is it a combination?
I think he's finding a better groove. Bruno, you know, his first matchup with Valanciunas was against Karl Anthony Towns, and you know, he did an okay job. You know, I think Towns only went like 1 of 9 from three or something like that. Some of those were open, but still, you know, I think Bruno, he just had a period of adjustment to his new responsibilities because obviously he had never really been a big man type of player. He had been more of a wing. And I think we're just seeing him find more of a comfort level. You know, obviously he's always had the height and the length to play the position, but, you know, he just isn't a big guy. He's very skinny. And, you know, I think for him it's more about defensive technique than just straight up size to get the better of some of his opponents. And he just looks more comfortable down there.
Yeah, I think I'll fall into the category if it's a combination. And Karl Anthony Towns is a tough matchup, but Karl Anthony Towns was not engaged in that game. I think that's not taking anything away from Bruno. Like, I thought he played really well, honestly. Like, I didn't think that – I thought he really took advantage of the opportunity that he was given, like a lot of the players on this team. But I think it's also probably a combination in the sense that, you know, you got to probably not really fully engage Karl Anthony Towns, taking really laissez-faire shots from three. And I know he takes a lot of them, but, you know, 1 for 10. But you're right. I think also that happens, you know, that's – got to be on Bruno to be better. And you know, if you're an undersized big, you got to be smarter than the other person. You got to play better technique and you got to play better defensive position. You have to be, you know, higher IQ than your other player that you're going up against. I thought it was good. I thought he played well over the past two games. I'm not sure whether that's going to stick over the next four or five, but I thought he played well. You know, the Grizzlies have a lot of, you know, the guys that got played, you know, or didn't play, I guess you'd say, that are out. Ja Morant being obviously the big one. Do you expect Ja Morant to be out for some length of time? What do you think, given being around the team in your situation and what you've heard about Ja Morant and what their plan is with him?
Yeah, so this is a complete guess, to be honest. You know, Grizzlies have been pretty playing things close to the vest when it comes to injury stuff. But, you know, I think he'll be out longer than a week. You know, I think a reason for that is that his official designation was week to week instead of day to day. And, you know, obviously the nature of the back injury, which he had the nasty fall at Indiana last week, obviously, on the cameraman. And then he re-aggravated, whatever that injury was at some point over the next couple of days and had back spasms. You know, it's just something that you can really only treat with ref. So it makes sense that they are going with the week-to-week title, just to make sure that he's actually resting and isn't feeling that pressure game-to-game to go through warm-ups and, you know, actually try to play. So, you know, it's very possible, obviously, that, I guess the designation came on Saturday, that next Sunday, they'll try him again and maybe he feels better and he'll actually play and he only ends up missing 8 days. You know, it's also possible that he isn't quite there. And, then we're going to the next week before he gets tested again. So just because of the, you know, realistic possibility that he isn't ready by next Sunday, I think it's possible that he won't get back to the week after that.
Do you think that does it matter to you that he got hurt and had to be helped off the court and they let him come back and play in that second half of that Indiana game? Or, I mean, I talked about this in the show yesterday, that I found it very strange that they were so cautious with his minutes earlier in the year. And then he literally had to be almost carried off the floor and they let him come back in the game and play over 30 minutes in a game where he was clearly hurt. And then, I mean, I guess I know that he obviously re-aggravated it, but where do you fall on that?
So I asked Taylor about this yesterday, and he said that they, you know, checked him out, tested him after he first got hurt, last Monday, not yesterday, but the week before, and he was good to go.
Right.
And it sounds like he re-aggravated that injury, not the next game, but the game after that. There is a moment where it looked like on a drive, he just didn't feel right after. And we walked off the court and I saw him kind of boasting to Taylor, like, you know, I'm not feeling well. And they took him out of that game. He ended up playing again. And then, once they, I guess the next day, he had some back spasms. So it sounds like it was just sort of a deterioration over the course of the week and not really something that was that serious right when it happened. It was like the initial bump and then another bump. Now that's when I have a back spasm. So previously, I think it was just soreness.
Well, that makes more sense. That makes more sense now that when you put it like that, is probably looks like maybe more a combination of things. So disregard my rant yesterday about from my previous episode about them not managing Jokic. Either way, either way that falls into the situation of them. You know, now he's playing over 30 minutes all the time. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's some type of plan for Ja, but I don't know what that plan might be. It seems like it's kind of all over the place. And you're right, from the designation of week to week, it does seem like that he'll be out. Obviously more than just this week, and so they'll reevaluate. I mean, they're not gonna rush him back as a franchise player for games in the middle of December that don't matter in a season. So let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll continue our conversation with Amari Sankofa from The Athletic. Welcome back to the show. Talk with Amari Sankofa like we do every single Tuesday on this show. Let's get into a little bit of Jaren Jackson Jr. He's had obviously the spotlight on the past two games. He played really, really well in the Pacers game. Did not play well in the Timberwolves game. Do you think they should be forcing? I mean, I think they should be getting Jaren in good spots, but do you think they should be forcing the ball into Jaren whenever there's like nobody else. I mean, you have some of your top scorers out, obviously Jonas Valanciunas, Ja Morant, Brandon Clark, all these guys you're normally depending on for points are not there. So they'll be expecting them to win games in the next few weeks is not like it's not going to happen. But do you think they should be like just forcing the ball down, like just down to Jaren, like every almost, you know, just really trying to get him heavily involved in this offense?
I do. And, you know, and obviously that's why she depended on him actually, you know, being able to stay in the game because of his fouls. And, you know, they
right.
said on the show previously that I think they should have him play through foul trouble a bit more than they do. But anyway, you know, I do agree that that should be their approach. And I thought they did a good job of that yesterday, actually. He had a season high 31 points. He took 19 shots, which I believe is also a season high. Yeah, actually, I just checked it is a season high for him. And he was engaged the whole game. He just looked good, basically. He shook off his foul trouble. And he did have five fouls, but some of those were a little ticky-tacky.
Yeah.
You know, I think Jenkins basically said, okay, we're not going to ruin Jaren's night, you know, because of these calls that, you know, he clearly disagreed with. So maybe last night's a sign of what's to come, you know, as long as Jaw's out and, you know, Kyle, Brandon Clark, Jonas, some combination of them are also out. But even when they're in the game, I think Jaren should be getting about the shot attempts he got last night anyway. Like, there should never be a game where he takes less than 15. And I think there's more games this season where he's taking less than 15 than more, actually pretty substantially. So
I think there's more games he's taken less than five than yeah. more than 15. I mean I'm kind of joking, but I think that's probably true.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, he's definitely had a lot of games where he's been in the single digits. You know, again, partially because of foul trouble, partially because, you know, they're just not good at consistently getting him shots. So last night was a step in the right direction, certainly. You know, obviously it shouldn't take half the team being injured for that to happen, but now that it has, you hope that they kind of learn, oh, you know, when we get Jaren the ball, he can do a lot of stuff with it.
Yeah, I mean, getting him involved, we've talked in the show extensively about getting Jaren involved. I don't know if that's not new to the listeners on this show between myself and you and myself and David and just my show. So that's not a new revelation, but I think you're right. Like, Jaren should be taking at least 15 shots a game, every single game. Obviously, like games like last night, games like the Timberwolves game, you're going to have people like Dylan shoot a lot. You're going to have people like even Solomon Hill take shots just because there's no one else to take the shot. So, like, it doesn't really matter. But I do think in the next few games, if Brandon Clark continues to be out, especially if Ja Morant continues to be out, hopefully you'll have Jonas Valanciunas back. He was just sick. Right? He was just sick, and you think he'll be back Wednesday, or what do you think?
Yeah, sounds like he's just sick. You know, obviously, Memphis has kind of had sporadic weather, hot, cold. So
sure.
You know, maybe that has something to do with it. You know, they didn't say exactly what Jonas is dealing with, but if it is just, you know, like a cold or something like that, then you would figure that he would be ready for Wednesday, or at the very least, you know, I guess our next game after that is Saturday. So we will see him probably sometime this week.
Right. So hypothetically, even if Jonas comes back, you still want Jaren out there. You still want him heavily involved in the offense. He is your best player on the floor with Ja out. Even with Ja there, he's your second best player, I think, on the floor. And so I think you're right. Getting him involved is something the Grizzlies can really, really take advantage of, and maybe try to get him going without Ja there. Maybe try to make him a focal point, and hopefully when Ja gets back, that can continue. But let's take one more quick break. We'll take you right back with Amari Sekofa from The Athletic. Welcome back to the show, talking with Amari Sekofa from The Athletic. I want to talk about De'Anthony Melton. I want to see what did you think of De'Anthony, given his time in, you know, not limited minutes, not 4 minutes in the quarter or junk time, real minutes against real teams, real NBA players. Where did you land? Where do you land on De'Anthony Melton?
I like De'Anthony Melton a lot. You know, I thought he put together really good back-to-back games. You know, maybe a little bit better Sunday at Minnesota, but still, I mean, he had 7 rebounds Sunday at 9 last night. He was a bit more aggressive in his shot making, I thought, last night. Even though he did take 10 on Sunday, And he's just really solid defensively as well. I mean, he has a long wingspan. And usually say good hands to describe bigs, but he is a guard with good hands. Like, he just, his hands are everywhere, whether it's him grabbing rebounds, it's him deflecting passes. You know, obviously just defending guys straight up. I think he's a really good player, and I think he has shown that he's deserving of more playing time, you know, regardless of if Jaws in the lineup or not.
I think that, and you tell me if you what you think about this, or if this is wrong, but I think that Taylor Jenkins and the coaching staff view him more as a straight up point guard than a kind of a off guard wing that can play multiple positions. And so given that framework, there will be difficulty, I see, getting on the floor if you have Ja and then Tyus, and then he's just the third string point guard. Do you think that's how they view them, or do you think that there's potential for him to play alongside of Ja Morant?
I think it's true for the most part that they view him as a point guard. I think a big reason why he had only played sporadically up until this week is because, you know, you obviously have Ja Morant and Tyus Jones as your one and two, and, you know, there's not really room in the lineup for a three or a third point guard, to be a little bit more clear there. I'm not referring to a small forward. But with that said, you know, like last night, he Jenkins did close the game with Jones and Milton playing alongside each other, and Jenkins basically said he just wanted to see how they looked. You know, he just decided to mix it up. Game was already out of reach, so you might as well see what you could get out of that pairing. So, you know, that could be a sign that the coaching staff is starting to look at giving Melvin more minutes at the two. The coaches haven't said this whole season that they see him as a one or a two. So even if his minutes basically say that he's a point guard, they've been steady in saying that they believe he could play both positions. So I guess it's a sign that since he's been playing so well, he's not going to get minutes at the one when Ja Morant comes back. You got to find some time for him at the two. And we've made this argument before. I think a lot of people have. So it's pretty obvious. Grayson Allen and Marco Guderich have not been that great behind Dylan Brooks. You know,
right.
Dylan Brooks has an absurd plus minus because his backups, I mean, Dylan's been solid, not taking anything away from him, but his backups have been really, really bad.
And right.
The other thing, Dylan has been out playing Marco and Grayson, which he did last night, then that should be your backup too. You know, and that seems pretty straightforward. So maybe we'll begin to see that change.
Yeah, I think I would like to see, and someone asked this on the mailbag yesterday, and I personally would love to see it was a lineup of Ja and Melton and Kyle, Brandon, and Jaren. And I personally think, I mean, you got to be careful putting that lineup out there because I think there's some offensive, maybe some offensive deficiencies you have to worry about there. So you got to be careful, but I personally would love to see it. But what do you think about the idea of Melton alongside Ja Morant? And I threw this out there yesterday in my show of the idea of maybe some fourth quarter, early fourth quarter stuff, and just give Ja rest on the defensive end. Not necessarily, you don't need necessarily Melt to score, but maybe just give Ja some more umph on the offensive end to go and particularly score heavy minutes and heavy points late in the quarters.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a pairing that makes complete sense on paper. You know, I think the reason why Ja and Dylan make sense together is because Dylan's a stronger defender and can take some of the bigger matchups.
Sure.
And, you know, and you don't really get that with – well, you don't get that with Marco at all. And, you know, I guess Grayson in theory is a stronger defender than Marco. And the numbers actually suggest Grayson's been really good defensively, but I also think it helps that Grayson's played both of his minutes with Brennan Clark and Kyle Anderson. So basically, if D'Antoni Melton could take some of those bigger matchups, that he should be able to since his wingspan is so big. And then you also get some secondary playmaking and hopefully some, you know, catch and shoot ability on the perimeter as well. Then you're looking at a guy that gives you a lot of the same things you get from Dylan, really. You know, and I think that's just a pairing that a lot of people would like to see. I actually looked it up, I think, Saturday or Sunday, and Ja and Melton have only played 4.3 minutes together this season. So we haven't
right.
really seen that at all. I can't even remember when they played together. It must have been, you know, I think garbage time of some random game.
Yeah,
but we haven't seen it at all. So that's something that I think a lot of us would like to see once Ja comes back.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said, you got to be careful with that lineup just because, you know, you talk about the idea of Ja being better on the offensive end, but you also have to be careful because they could just sink off on Melton onto Ja and really make it, you know, worse. And so you And those are always things that as a coach, they're always having to look at is what happens, you know, when they do those type of things. Then you might have, you know, then you really do have to go back with Dylan Brooks. Like you mentioned, he has an above average defender and can actually score the basketball, you know, quite well, as we've seen mid time. Sometimes it's detriment, but, you know, it's as far as shooting, but he can score the ball reliably in this league. And I think that's probably one of the most important things for this team, you know, sometimes late in the fourth quarter. So it is something to know. Like, you got to be careful. You can't just, like, you know, you can't throw out a bunch of defenders and then you put Ja on the offensive end. In theory, yes, what I'm saying is you give them a break on the defensive end, but then offensively, they just pay little to no attention to everybody else and try to sink in on your main score and double team. So there are a lot of little mechanics like that as far as lineup. So it's just not of one size fits all sometimes. So I like the idea, but like I said, you always have to be careful with those type of things for sure. Maury, I appreciate it. What can the Grizzlies fans read of yours right now?
Yeah, so for the story last night about the Grizzlies kind of coming to Jaren Jackson Jr.'s defense as he had another game with foul trouble. Dinkins picked up his first technical, you know, defending up to the refs, and then Solomon Hill had a lot of good stuff to say about his foul situations after the game. You know, just basically being that while Jaren does do stuff, seems like the refs basically kind of picking him as well. So I wrote that last night, and that's one of the site now, and then I also have a mailbag coming tomorrow, so you all can look out for that as well.
As always, it's been great. Make sure you go and follow Amari Sankofa on Twitter at Amari Sankofa. Follow me on Twitter at King_producer and the show, of course, at Locked On Grizz. That's where we always continue the conversation after the show. Make sure you go and subscribe to the show as well in whatever podcast platform you choose, but also go subscribe to The Athletic. I think you guys are running a promo, Christmas promo or something. I saw that on Twitter. You may be like $20 for the year, something like that. But yeah, either way, it's super cheap.
Yeah, so we're doing, I think we're doing two promos right now. One is if you buy a gift sub for somebody, you'll get a T-shirt. You know, I've had a lot of people ask me, how do you get T-shirts? And now, you know, this is the way that you can get one. So look out for that. And then two, for Cyber Monday, you know, we're running promos off throughout the week. I don't know if the 66% off is something that is consistent, but you can definitely get at least 40, which still will put you at about a $30 subscription for the year, which for everything you get, you know, I'm biased, but that sounds like a steal to me.
I'm biased too. I think it's great. And even if you don't get all that stuff, it's only like $9 a month. So make sure you go and do that. A lot of great content from Amari and Peter all the time. Amari will be on the road trip with the team the next four games. So look out for his post-game stuff, pre-game stuff, all that stuff. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. Amari, I appreciate it. Let's do it again next week.
Absolutely, man. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, man.